Hello, this is Lysander Goodfellow, and you are listening to another episode of Guildcast. And if you didn't know this already, the Ritualist rocks.
Everyone, welcome back to the 79th episode of Guildcast for August 13th, 2007. I'm your host, Sean. The topic of this episode is Guild Wars webcomics and the people behind them. I have two audio interviews I've done with the creator of War Wizard Comics and one with Healbot Blues, as well as some text email interviews I did with some other webcomic creators in the community. I'll also give a list of some of the best ones out there for you to check out for yourself in the show notes for today. And, if that's not enough, you'll never guess who is back doing his Skills and Build segment for us. Yep, Cal Agram is back teaching us about energy management in his segment this episode. Actually, when he told me that he did a segment, I had to ask him if the Lotro servers were down or something. Got a little worried there, but it's a great segment and I think you'll all enjoy it. So, now we have the people who asked to be mentioned this time around, and they include Brother Wakely, Serpent Annan, who had a birthday recently, and Dayfire, who actually has a birthday tomorrow. Then there's Decimator of All, Fear Death to Me, Mariano Swifthand, Ketchup and Sugar, and Shadow Carnus. So, although I just did a show 2 days ago, there has actually been some news already. And no, it doesn't have anything to do with Eye of the North. Apparently, some players have discovered an exploit with the Reconnect system introduced a few months ago, combined with the trade system. By exiting the game during a trade session, it was possible to actually duplicate items. And from what I hear, this exploit was going on for quite some time, and a large group of the biggest offenders were banned from the game. As of right now, as I record this, the Reconnect system has been taken offline until ArenaNet can repair that trade exploit. They did say, though, Gale said in a post on Guild Wars Guru that they will not be doing a rollback like they did, I believe it was over a year ago, last time they had a big problem like this. So that's a good thing. But I will be happy when they get this sorted out because there, if you look on Guild Wars Guru, there's actually a picture of a trade window, a screenshot of a trade window with 7 full stacks of Arm Braces of Truth. That's 1,750 of those things. So, you know, if you want to talk about a completely ruined in-game economy, that's it right there. So, I think it'll be really interesting to see how ArenaNet sorts this out ultimately. So anyway, on to the main topic of webcomics. I decided to do this show after some suggestions from a few players, but I've always been a fan of many of these webcomics myself, especially Healbot Blues. And if you'll remember, a few months ago, I was actually in a webcomic, and that was the War Wizard comic, whose creator, Mordekaida, is one of the audio interviews I did in this episode here. But before I play those two interviews, I wanted to read a few of the text interviews that I had with a couple other webcomic creators. So first, there's Guilt Wars by Cogito. I sent him and the other email text interview I did, a series of questions to answer, and they sent me back their answers. So here is Cogito's responses. Question number 1. Tell me a little bit about your webcomic, like the name, URL, and main theme or style. And he says, the comic is named Guilt Wars. That's G-U-I-L-T, Wars. Here's the URL, www.geocities.com/shadowfey, and I will put a link to that in today's show notes. The style is kind of a machinima with a little image doctoring and word balloons. It's very simple, really. The main theme follows the exploits of a small group of characters, both players and henchmen. Question number 2. How do you usually find inspiration for your storyline? There are 2 main contributors, myself and Harlequin. Harlequin does the comics featuring Cassand. The themes come mostly from the game itself. One of the things that impressed me about Guild Wars is the motley band of henchmen, or henchies as I like to call them. What's interesting about them is that everyone who plays the game gets to know them on an almost personal level. We all know, for instance, that we can count on Orion to unleash his rain of fire after the end of a battle, as if to celebrate the victory with a little fireworks display, kind of like a period at the end of a sentence. We've all seen Alicia rush into the violent center of the battle as if she were the invincible barbarian. That sequence of screenshots in which she tries to single-handedly defeat a whole herd of sand drakes was lamentably easy to get, in fact. We've all wondered why Claude and Tom ditch the party so often when we get to a new town or outpost. We've all failed to complete a quest after battling through miles of hostile territory because we forgot to drag Koss along for the ride. We've all wondered why so many characters' names have a silent H in them. Okay, maybe we haven't all wondered that, but I have. The Henchies have their little quirks that we've all come to know after dealing with them routinely. They are like the heroes of ancient myths, so telling stories about them is a little like inventing a mythology. In this case, a funny mythology. Some of the inspiration comes from observing human nature from the outside. I've always felt myself to be on the outside of society looking in. There are, of course, a few pop culture references thrown in from time to time, thinly veiled. Sometimes, as in the Nerfage episode, in which Kagito must deal with a sudden and unexplained loss of power, the inspiration comes from the Oracle of Grenth. That episode actually came out a few weeks before the Necromancer Minion Limit. Alright, so on to question number 3. How do you create your webcomic? What programs or artistic media do you use? Each comic begins with the inspiration. I have an idea of what would make a funny story. Then comes the screen captures. This is probably the most difficult part because the Henchies tend to move around a lot when you try to get them in the shot. After the shots are done, I go through and reframe them and add the grainy quality that some fans think is accidental, using an image processor. I then paste the images into a presentation program of the sort that business people use to construct slideshows to kill off their coworkers with boredom. This lets me add the word and thought balloons and also rearrange the sequence until I'm satisfied with the result. After all that is done, I move the images and sequence them onto a web page, and then I send it up so Harlequin can push the images out to a public image repository and recreate the web page for public consumption. Sorry for not advertising that product names. Question number 4. What do you see for the future of your webcomic? And he says, well, we literally jumped the shark in episode 30, which was named Jumpage. We've never been under any mandate to slavishly adhere to a comic production schedule. I think that frees us up to allow the humor to drive the comic rather than the need to put something out. Unfortunately, the muse of Guilt Wars has not visited much lately. I have The North coming out soon, though, so it might inspire some new episodes. We'll have to wait and see. It must begin with the inspiration, though. There must be the spark of an idea that needs to be written down and told for me to get out of my chair and start with the screen captures. Mythologies really do write themselves. Question number 5. Anything else you'd like to add? He says, thank you for the interview. I'd like to thank the fans out there who have offered a lot of encouragement and some constructive criticism. Finally, that bit that Alicia says in episode 12, Gnosis, where she's trying to convert the Grawl, it's all true. Don't be afraid when you find the fourth wall. Remain calm. Just turn around and pretend you didn't see it. Okay, so that's all the questions for Guilt Wars. You should go check that out at the link that I will provide on the show notes. And next we have a text interview with Carlo from the webcomic Requiem for Sanity. So the first question is, tell me a little bit about your webcomic, like the name, URL, and the main theme or style. And he says, well, I'm Carlo, the creator of the Guild Wars webcomic Requiem for Sanity. It's the second webcomic I've started, and the drawing style is the same like my first one, webcomic Anavoy, which was practically about anything and very random. Requiem for Sanity is, of course, about Guild Wars. It starts with an assassin girl named Tsukimiya going to Ascalon for an errand, and then the searing falls right on her head. This, of course, is the start of the Flameseeker prophecies. During the storyline, more allies join in, like the perverted bald monk Raldi, magical healing type bunny girl Niene, and the hot-headed avenging type warrior Karuro. And, well, if you play Guild Wars, you pretty much know the story's direction. But there will be added plot twists and sometimes walking a bit off the story track. Lately, though, the Evil Gwen comics are getting quite popular. The style is kind of chibi-ish. And as it started with my first webcomic, me and my old coworker Tycho dubbed it Anavoy style. Still thinking about giving a few tweaks, as drawing and detail tends to blur it a bit for some reason. Requiem can be found on www.anime-envoy.com, and I will again put a link to that in today's show notes. Question number two, how do you usually find inspiration for your storyline? Inspiration for the main plot is mostly thanks to the lore forum on GW Online, because the main game doesn't go in-depth in these. The comic, in that case, can go explore these tidbits of lore. The occasional joking and fighting mostly pop up due to the weird conversations I have with friends, and watching anime. Anime is definitely one of the major inspirations. Question number three, how do you create your webcomic? What programs or artistic media do you use? For things I cannot see quite clear in my head, I tend to sketch around for a bit just to see how it would look like. If I already have a clear image, I skip the sketching and immediately go to the comic drawing in Macromedia Flash, followed with the finishing touch in Adobe Photoshop. Question number four, what do you see for the future of your webcomic? My goal for the webcomic is to finish the Guild Wars 1 saga first, and with Guild Wars 2 not coming until years, this should be plenty of time, hopefully. I want this comic to get known to the Guild Wars community, even people who don't play Guild Wars but still enjoy reading it. And finally, question number five, anything else you'd like to add? I'd like to thank the readers for the support and Sean and Guildcast for the interview. It really came as a surprise. Let's end the Guild Wars 1 era with a bang. So there you have it. Thanks goes out to those two for participating in those interviews. I picked what I thought were the best for these text and audio interviews, but of course everyone's tastes are different. So, as I mentioned, I will be putting a list of other available GW comics in the show notes for today. And now, on to the audio interviews. Why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about, like, the name of your webcomic and what it's about and the URL and everything?
Oh, the name of my comic is War Wizard Comics Guild Wars, and its URL is gwcomic.warwizard.net. And basically what it's about is just what real players go through in the comic with some funny, serious spins on it. You know, did a comic about, you know, PvP runners, and I really don't like those little guys. Hate when they run from me.
So usually what you try to do is if you come across something in game, you try to make you figure, well, hey, that'll make a nice little comic.
I mean, like I just finished one today, and it was, I was in Ultimate Ruins a couple of days ago on my Mesmer, and I saw about 50, 60 bots just running through there. I'm sitting there going, what the hell?
Yeah, they're all, monk Mesmers or some form of a monk.
Yeah, I logged my computer up, had to restart.
Oh.
Yeah.
So your inspiration is mostly from everyday things, and I know, like, the way you do yours, at least, is you take you use screenshots, and then you add like speech bubbles over the screenshots and different parts here and there. And I notice you also, it looks like you add some kind of a filter over the screenshot itself. Is that right?
I have no clue. I don't know. I just put a screenshot up, put some bubbles up in there, and do some commentary. And
yeah,
you know, I'm not a very inspirational person. I just do what I like and try to.
Yeah, just try to make it funny.
Yeah. I mean, like, the very first comic I did, it was with crabs, you know? I was sitting there going down the beaches in Kanta and going, you know what? I think they're plotting to take over the planet. That's where I got my first comic.
That's cool. So, when was that first comic? How long have you been doing this now?
Thing's been like over 6 months now.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't keep track of that. You know, I just do one every comic when it hits me, you know.
Yeah.
I try to do one every couple of weeks, but I'm so involved in so many stuff right now.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to get one site up about a review site, and it's going slowly.
So you don't have, like, a regular schedule or anything? You just kind of do it whenever you're inspired, I guess?
Yeah, basically. I mean, I'm not going to try to force, you know, a stuck comic on myself.
Yeah.
You know, I want it to be something that's funny and true, not just say, let's try to force something.
Yeah, it reminds me of, like, sometimes you read the Sunday comics, and a lot of those guys have to have a comic every week, and they're just not funny all the time because they have to have them every week.
Yeah, there are times I have, like, two or three ideas going on in my head, and I either can't do it because I don't have the people to come help me, or I just don't have the right area, or, like, I gotta create a sin just to get that runner picture. I'm like, I don't want to create a sin. Which I finally did break down and make one, and she's finished all three chapters.
Oh, yeah? That's cool.
Yeah.
So what do you see as far as the future of your webcomic? Do you think you'll just do it till whenever, or?
I think I'll do it until people stop visiting it.
Yeah.
You know? I'm not really doing it for anyone in particular except for myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I work for a comic company that makes personalized comics, and that's where I got most of my inspiration of how to do this stuff. It's all my websites just basically just for me. If you like it, you like it. If you don't come anymore.
Okay, cool. Well, I just wanted to do, you know, a quick little interview, and I'm probably going to have a few more on the show. But I appreciate you taking the time and everything and answering the questions.
Yeah. Better make me look good because I only live a couple hours away from you.
Oh, yeah, that's right. All right, cool.
Sadly, I don't have a car.
Oh, darn. So I'm here with Lee, the creator of Healbot Blues, the webcomic that's actually a fan site, an arena fan site for Guild Wars. And I wanted to bring him on to ask him a few questions. And what I did was in the forums, in the Guildcast forums, I went ahead and I asked a lot of the listeners and the forum members to kind of type up some of their own questions that they'd like to know about Healbot from Lee. So I'm going to read a lot of these questions myself and tell who asked each question, and then at the end I have a couple questions of my own. So I just want to say, Lee, thank you for coming on here, and I really appreciate you taking the time out and everything. I know there's a lot of people that really enjoy your comic, and I'm definitely one of them, which is why I wanted to do this show, just to kind of highlight a lot of the webcomics that are out there that, you know, revolve around Guild Wars. There's quite a few of them, actually, since I've been doing the research. But yours, I would say, I mean, especially since the fact that it's actually a fan site now, I would say it's at the top, definitely at the top.
Thank you.
So, you ready to get started? Ready for me to bombard you with these questions here?
Yep, I am. Welcome to the show, everyone, and thanks for reading Healbot Blues and making my beleaguered monk very famous. I'm hoping I can answer all your questions about the series.
Okay, so we'll start out here with this first one here is from Chio. And he says, you always make me laugh. How do you come up with the story? Does the storyline pop up in front of you? How do you do it?
Let me start by kind of discussing how I got into doing parody comics. A long time ago, when I was a budding illustrator in high school, one of the things that I worked on that started making me think about funny caricatures was a little bit of work I did on a short-lived student paper, a publication that I think it was our senior English class worked on. Anyway, my contribution was coming up with caricatures of certain teachers. And of course, I would draw them in the most ridiculous fashions. I would stick in all sorts of references. For example, there was this one old battle axe who taught algebra and basically all the higher math. So when it came time to draw her, I put stuff in the background, like a locked grade book, an impossible list of homework, and I put a Glorious Ladies of Wrestling belt on her. I think she objected to that one. I think she thought it had to do something with sexual preference. But anyways, that kind of got me started on parody comics. And when I finally got into reading comics, I wasn't very interested in comics when I was young. I looked at American comics, and I thought they were kind of boring. I actually didn't start collecting until publishers here brought out Japanese manga, and then I sort of fell in love with the humorous expressions that manga characters would be drawn with, and how they would change from being incredibly serious. You know, they would be fighting, you know, a dragon or something, and then suddenly it would be a comical scene mm-hmm. with wild expressions. So that was an artistic influence. And lastly, bringing all that to bear, you know, in Guild Wars, I started the comic on the Guild Wars Guru forum. It was something I thought all the people there would be interested in, because I was highlighting what I thought was a big game snafu with the monks not having certain abilities and basically relegated to keeping noobs alive. So I come up with a story based on impressions that I get from the game, people who comment on these on these changes in forums, and then basically using the artistic vocabulary of manga illustration to get it onto paper.
Yeah, that actually answers another one of these questions from Grugio, where he says, do you get all your material from Guild Wars, or do you get some of it from other games, MMOs, and modify it to fit Guild Wars? And I think you just answered that one, because...
Actually, I'd like to add something to that question.
Okay.
When it comes to source material, I think it's important to weigh what you include carefully. Mm-hmm. When you're making a fan comic, you kind of have to decide right away whether you're going to be, you know, specific to a game, or if you're going to be just a general genre commentator. I think that if you look at my comic, there aren't actually a whole lot of things brought in from other series. I have a couple that you see in the mini strip and some of the specials, for instance. I mean, one of the first ones was in, let's see, that would have been the Winter's Day comic, where I had Heelbot pretending to be the elf chick from Lord of the Rings and getting lured into smiting. So that was a close tie to a similar fantasy, you know, epic that most people would know about. I did it again with a couple of the mini strips, references to Dragon Riders of Pern, of course, references to Advanced Dungeons and Dragons, and just lastly, the one I have up on the site now is a reference to Conan the Barbarian. But I think that a Guild Wars comic, you know, has to pretty much center on Guild Wars.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you end up with what I see is almost a formula now for webcomics. You have a couple of dudes. They're commenting on the games that they play. They have a couple anthropomorphic pets that are there for, you know, comic relief. And that's basically all they do. They squish genres together and just pick out whatever's funny. It's not specific to anything.
Yeah.
You don't read it and say, hey, well, that guy must really know what's going on in World of Warcraft or Guild Wars or whatever.
Yeah, I personally, I find the specific humor the funniest. You know, when you can pick on something specific and it's kind of obscure to most people, unless you really know the game. That's the funniest stuff.
Yeah, I get a lot of comments on very, very specific things that I put in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always nice, because you're trying to cram in as much as you possibly can about Guild Wars into the comic without making it text-heavy. I mean, yeah. You can have a comic that's just all dialogue about hey, can we get a comic about our awesome raid on whatever, whatever, and you're just basically listing what happens, and it's just basically an edited version of in-game chat, which is about the most boring thing you could read.
Very true. All right, so let's read Toodles. Another one of his questions. Yeah, we got one from Toodles here, and he says, how much experience does Heelbot have?
Okay. The character of Heelbot, I portray her as a fairly hard-boiled PvE player. She's seen most of the regions of the game and been killed by most of its creatures. She's a little on the slow side, though, as you can tell from, for instance, the comic I did about Augury Rock, where she basically arrived in time to see people already set up with farming plans and, of course, the taxi whammos that were running around the desert, and she couldn't even actually get a party and had to kill Lena in order to get out of Augury Rock. So, time-wise, she's a little far behind since she's a pickup group monk. But as far as experience, she's supposed to be, you know, knowledgeable of just about everything.
Yeah.
If this was a question about the monk that I actually play in the game, I'm closing in on 2 million experience points.
Oh, okay, cool. So you don't really base Heelbot off of your own monk character, or do you?
No.
No.
Heelbot is a blending of basically all bun-headed monks in PvE.
That's nicely put. All right, so let's see. We got quite a few questions from Rory.
Yes.
And the first one she asks is, was monk the first profession you started playing in Guild Wars?
Yes. I started as a monk because the friends that had also purchased Guild Wars at the same time had already sort of picked out other character classes. So I knew we would need a healer.
Yeah. And who doesn't need a healer?
But then they left, and I had to do the rest of the game by myself, essentially.
Oh, yeah. So her second question, she says, do you really think Heelbot has goofy hair buns?
Of course she has goofy hair buns. She has long hair, and she needs a place to hide her snack cakes. So if you ever were able to, like, watch her get ready in the morning, you would see her hide all sorts of stuff in those hair buns. And also notice she lets down her hair when she switches to smiting because she thinks she looks cooler that way, more awesome, yeah, you would say.
So Rory also wants to know, what is Heelbot's favorite mini pet?
Heelbot's favorite mini pet. I think she doesn't like them too much, but the pig that we got from the Dragon Festival that one time, was it Dragon Festival or was it New Year's? New Year's, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
That's her favorite pet. It doesn't make any weird roaring noises and scares her.
Yeah, it's not the mini troll, huh? So, let's see. Next, she wants to know, does Heelbot farm? Are there any 55-ing comics in the future?
I left 55-ing pretty much back in the start of the series where I think I pretty much make my case for monks that do that in my monk or Heelbot thinks of monks. It's not really labeled as such. It's, let's see here. After the Elementalist one. Yeah, after the Elementalist one, I drew a comic that was supposed to be what monks think about monks, which, of course, is kind of stupid. But it starts with me taking over the controls in Guild Wars. You know, I go and I'm hunting down the Yak Slapper, and I say, hey, Heelbot, you draw the comic. So this was the first one where I had Heelbot do the drawings.
Oh, cool.
And in there you see the 55 monk bragging about defeating warriors in random arenas and basically being all in Heelbot's face about PvP. And, of course, she's responding that the 55er is now in Thunderhead Keep on the PvE side, And what happens in PvE when you're a 55 monk? Well, that's what you see in the last panel. Some people have thought that that's Healbot killing the other monk, but that's not true. That's simply what happens to 55ers when they run into the evil dwarves and basically get shattered, rended, and chopped into a stinky pile of poo. Basically, no, Healbot is not going to 55 ever. I have enough superior runes that I could, but I'm just, I guess, too much of a old school role player to say to myself, yeah, I'm going to set aside armor, I'm going to do all these runes to give myself insanely low hit points and use a skill that basically keeps me alive so I can go earn money out in the world. It just doesn't jive with me. I just can't think of a Healbot doing that. I don't know.
Yeah, to each his own. All right, so now I got some questions from Logan Starlogic. And he basically wants to know about your drawing talent. He wants to know how did you teach yourself or what, and basically, you know, where you got your schooling, and who's your favorite artist. He says his is Picasso.
Yes. I would say that for the most part I am self-taught. I have been drawing basically since, for about as long as I can remember. A lot of improvement occurred when I would find an artist that I did like and basically tried to emulate their work. And I was interested in the fantasy genre pretty early, being a old school gamer, mm-hmm. You know, seeing the cover of Dragon Magazine or something in the bookstore would catch my eye, and I'd be like, well, maybe I can draw like that. So, you know, everyone starts with a little tracing paper and maybe a couple books on a fantasy illustration and sort of goes from there. Fortunately for me, by the time I was in college, I was already sort of ahead of the game when it came to figure drawing and some of the more technical illustration coursework. But actually, my degree is in graphic design, not in illustration at all.
Yeah, I actually went down that same road. I have a degree in graphic design as well.
Small and here world. We are doing Guild Wars fan sites as a result of our wonderful degrees in graphic design.
That's that's what graphic design degrees are good for, I guess. Huh?
If I have to pick from an all-time scenario, I really enjoy going through and just looking at the work of Leonardo da Vinci.
Oh, yeah.
Just because I have I feel sort of a kinship with him when I look through his sketchbooks. It reminds me of what I do when I just sketch. One time I had an art professor show me a book that was literally just his sketches. It wasn't like an art book where there was some guy commenting on Da Vinci pieces. It was just panel after panel of sketches. And he would sketch, you know, everything from the classic figure sketches and anatomical sketches that you see to just, you know, things like the tips of pole arm weapons, you know, stuff that I would have drawn just the other day. You know, it was just interesting things where he would sketch stuff and try to figure out how stuff works.
Yeah.
And maybe invent something that in his mind would solve the problem. And that's, and when you do realize that, you know, he was basically the creator of so many, you know, advances, that it really is an impressive legacy. And it would be a dream of mine to go to Italy and see his museum.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that would be incredible.
Other artists that I like, you know, more from the modern times would include people like Larry Elmore, a longtime role-playing game illustrator. I can't think of the names of too many people, but basically anyone who's been involved in RPG or fantasy art from, you know, the 50s on, you know, I can appreciate their work and wish I had people paying me to do that kind of work.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe one day, huh? So he, Logan also goes on to ask another question, and he says, what's your political view on the tension between the Luxans and the Kurzics?
Well, I haven't really done too much with the alliance battles. I think that's basically a kind of a part of PvP that I've never really done. Mm-hmm. So the most I usually see of it is the red line swarming, you know, the Kurzic forest, you know. Yeah. See it on the map. That's about as much as I get into the alliance battle.
Yeah. Yeah, being an old school role player, you probably don't get into PvP very much. I'm basically it's the same way.
It's not something that I sought out immediately. I think it would be fun in a team. I do think, you know, I think it's amazing that people without a guild or without friends in the game would do PvP and like it. I know I would get really frustrated and probably turn into a griefer. I'd be a smitey griefer fairly soon if I played by myself.
So Logan, he ends his questions with more of a remark. He just says he loves all the Mesmer jokes.
Yeah, I love putting the Mesmer stuff in the comic as well. It's almost a bigger part of Ranger-brained than the Rangering. And none of it's really from actual playing of a Mesmer. It all sort of came about from the misunderstandings people had about the class. And
yeah.
Sort of similar to the situation where the monk is always invited but never really appreciated, whereas the Mesmer is never invited and their work is just sort of inscrutable.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I know, you know, I kind of get into the assassin jokes myself, and I try to throw one in every once in a while, and it's not because I hate the assassin. Actually, I have an assassin that I play occasionally, but so I know what I'm saying is I know where you're coming from, because I just throw them out there just because of the general consensus that this class is supposedly, you know, bad or not invited to parties or whatever. Just, and it's just fun making fun of that aspect of it, I think.
And I will also admit that my character in the comic, Miet, is she's sort of the pinup model of the comic. You know, Heelbot is just kind of a kid,
yeah.
But Miet's definitely a sophisticated lady, and you'll see more of a Fairbuckle kind of getting in trouble because he's not very sophisticated.
Yeah, I think it's cool that there's different personalities, and they vary like that, so that you can get, you know, you can run the gamut of how the classes. How you would think the classes would act, you know, as being a certain class, and you know, which I guess brings me to a question I kind of just thought of is when you think of the personality for the different characters, do you take into consideration like if you were that character and you were growing up and you pursued the class of, let's say, a ranger, you would have to have a certain personality to pursue that class. You would think.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I mean, do you put that into play in the characters?
Yes, there is an actual reason why, you know, Fairbuckle is sort of nonchalant and unfocused. Mm-hmm. It's kind of because, you know, I felt that way playing my ranger, who is level 20 and basically spent her time just sort of doing whatever she wanted in a mission. I didn't feel compelled to, you know, be on the defensive. You know, I didn't have to look at health bars.
Yeah.
I didn't have to tank. All I had to do was do a preparation now and then, or maybe keep my pet alive. Leveling a pet was very slow. You know, it was just sort of a leisurely pace where you would be looking for some sort of entertainment, you know, whether or not you're going to be dancing or, you know, trying to seduce the Mesmer or just sort of goofing off in general. Mm-hmm. There was also I did create the fighter, basically Heelbot's cousin, who you see in the strip about factions. the Tank Troubles strip where you have your character that has become a warrior and wants to get right into being either heroic and unstoppable or rich and, you know, just glamorous as far as owning everything, the best of everything right away. Hence her opening comment about, you know, what good is the monastery if they don't have, if they can't teach her mending right away. Has to go out and basically heal herself and get all the loot.
Yeah.
And in fact, breaks off of the plot of Factions, lured away by Taxi Whammo and his story of riches in the Prophecies campaign, and ends up going and farming Ettins and doesn't even bother completing the rest of the story because, well, you know, there's loot. And that's what tanks do. They go out and they hunt loot. If you've ever been chest farming, that's pretty much seems like how every warrior ends up. Like, I have my high armor and my speed. I will just run to the loot and do it over and over and over again.
So this, let's see. I also have a couple questions from Trixor. And his first question, he says, what is Healbot's alcohol of choice?
Well, if you look at probably what is one of my favorite specials, the intermission special, where you see Healbot goes for the drunken title. She's basically going overboard with Dwarven Ale. And, you know, basically ends up offending everybody, including Gale, with her. So Dwarven Ale is the answer.
What about what made you decide to make the comic?
I originally started, you know, Healbot Blues. I was playing the game and, you know, I was trying to think of something that I could do on the forums. And since most of the larger forums have an arts section, I came up with the Healbot comic kind of that way to have some fun on the forum. No grand motive.
And his last question, I think, is the best question of all.
Kidding me, right? I know what you're going to introduce.
He wants to know, is Healbot single?
Yes, Healbot is single. Pretty much sticking with the only relationship she's going to have is, you know, she has her cousin, T-Chan, the warrior. And if you have seen everything I've put on the forums, whether at Guild Wars Guru or whatnot, then you would know she's Healbot is part of the Evenia fan club. I'll just leave that at that.
Fair enough.
Mostly because I'm part of the Evenia fan club, but.
Yeah. So this, I've got a question from Godforsaken Angels, and he asks, if Healbot was part ranger, what would be her pet?
Well, Healbot does have all the secondaries unlocked, and she'll occasionally try them out to see if it'll help her win her fights. So I did give her Charm Animal once. I think that was in Nightfall. I found all those packs of lions that I think one of the NPCs was, I think there's that one guy who pretends to be the world's greatest hunter or something, and basically he's surrounded by these packs of lions, and I sent Healbot out there to charm a lion and basically get killed in the process when all the other ones attacked her. So she is like a level 12 lioness or something as her official charm animal pet.
Nice.
But as far as Healbot's concerned, her heroes are her pets.
Oh, so yeah.
She kind of treats them that way. She doesn't need an animal when she has, you know, Kost to bully around.
Yeah, and you have that whole series of the hero strips. You have one for each hero, don't you? Or you made
all the Nightfall heroes, yes.
Yeah.
And there are occasional, you know, strips that involve the other NPCs. Which I think has to do with the fact that a lot of the storyline, especially in Nightfall, you know, and a lot of the sort of emotional character development, all that stuff, you sit on the sidelines and sort of watch it happen in cut scenes. You see Menlo fight with, or not exactly fight, but get in trouble with Sin in factions, when he meets all the pretty young girls that he used to attend the monastery with. That's a story that basically you have no role in, but it's part of the game. In a serious sense, I mean, it basically gets carried out through the whole thing. Same with Nightfall, you have heroes that have their own stories and related quests that you are simply sort of going along with. And I thought that that was important enough, or seemed to be important enough to ArenaNet, that I would go ahead and fill in some missing scenes with the heroes, whether it be Jin's prom or what happened when Koss first picked up his weapon of choice.
Yeah, I remember that one. That's a good one. I didn't read the Jin's prom one though. That's hilarious.
Yeah, then that I got both of those initial heroes that you pick up, Jin and Sosuke, because they have, you know, they have their own little cut scene where you get glimpses into their personality.
Yeah.
And you easily, you know, write a backstory for that, and that's kind of where that came from.
So that's all the forum member questions, and I had a few of my own I wanted to ask before we wrap this up. Now, when you create the comic, do you use any kind of programs? Do you just draw it on paper and then scan it in, or do you use, like vector-based or Photoshop or what?
I've answered this before, obviously. People on the forums, when I used to post them online there, would ask me what procedure was involved in making the comics. I don't use a tablet. I use a good old pen and ink. In fact, the very first Peelbot comics were done with an actual quill tip type of manga pen.
Oh, nice.
I've now switched to just regular markers, but I will sketch out the Heelbot adventure. I will put it on a light box and ink it. The inked version will be thrown onto the Canon scanner, and then I'll work on it in Photoshop to get the text and the grayscale tones. I kind of suck at Photoshop, so that's why it's not in color. And basically, I wrap it up from there.
Do you have plans to do any like special color editions or anything like that?
Special color editions. I basically removed color from the equation because of time.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a lot of time to accurately represent armors, backgrounds, all that stuff. It's easier if you want a color comic to just do the screenshot comics that you see out and about. Mm-hmm. For Guild Wars, you probably pose your characters in game faster than you could draw and then color them. So grayscale is a way to get some texture and tones. There are some effects that you can create with that are pretty much expected when you draw in a manga style. But as far as color, I would do it. I mean, I've done it for some of the commissions. I should say one or two of the commissions that I've done. And eventually, if I'm not too lazy this fall, I'll do some desktop backgrounds for Heelbot that'll be in color.
Oh, nice. That'll be for people to download for themselves?
No, I plan to charge about $100 for...
Seems about worth it.
It'll be available on the site.
Oh, okay, cool. So what do you see as far as the future of Heelbot, with, you know, the introduction of Guild Wars 2, which considered a separate game, I mean, will you continue it with that storyline of Guild Wars 2, do you think, or what?
Well, I'm surprised you're asking about that already with Eye of the North pending.
Well, I mean, I think with Eye of the North...
Guild Wars 2 is going to be, you know, at least 2 years away, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I would assume that you would continue with Eye of the North since it's, you know, coming out so soon.
Well, I imagine
you have a lot in store for us with Eye of the North.
Yeah, there will be another basically special series We had, Hiobot's original series, which kind of covers the prophecy storyline. Then the specials, which will just be, the one-off weirdness that happens. The Ranger Brain strip will continue. But I'm going to make an announcement. I'm going to say that the one for Eye of the North is going to actually, you will see a combination of all the characters. You will see Heelbot, Fairbuckle, Niet, T-Chan, most of the side characters, they'll all be in the same comic.
Oh, so that's something new with the Eye of the North release.
Yeah.
Cool.
They'll all get into trouble together.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. So then as far as Guild Wars 2, since it's so far away, you don't really have any plans for that yet?
Yeah, I really can't make plans for Guild Wars 2. One of the things you have to look at is, well, if you want to keep your site updated, or I should say, if you want to keep people coming to your site, you have to post on a regular basis, which means between the end of Eye of the North and the start of Guild Wars 2, you have, 50 weeks or more of comics that you just have to make. You want to keep people from forgetting about you. So
yeah,
when Guild Wars 2 finally, surfaces, I'll either bring back, the Heelbot gallery, but I'm pretty sure I'll have to go on hiatus just to keep myself from, getting carpal tunnel or some sort of deformity from drawing comics constantly.
Well, it sounds good. I know, there's a lot of people who really appreciate your comic and they read it on a regular basis. Do you have anything else you'd like to say? I didn't even give out the URL yet, so you want to give all that out and anything else you want to say?
Well, the site with my Heelbot galleries and the other galleries is at www.crithitcomics.com. That's one word. CRITHITCOMICS. And you'll see the Heelbot gallery there with Heelbot chastising Fairbuckle. I do appreciate everybody coming to visit the site with my ultra-secretive tracking software. I get to see where people are coming from as far as their links and things. I get to see, posts on forums about my comic. A lot of the fun ones are from sites where the comments are all in some impossible to understand foreign language. I have a lot of Dutch fans, but I cannot read what they say. You just hope that you see the happy smileys instead of like the thumbs down smileys.
Hi there, I'm Cal Agram and this is Skills and Builds. It's been a while since I've done a segment. I asked Loudon a while back what he thought I should talk about, and he asked me to do a show about Second Wind versus Aether Prodigy, which are two elementalist elite spells used for energy management. So I thought, hey, I could do a whole segment about energy management, including that as part of the show. So, here we go. Energy management is a critical aspect of the game. If your build uses too much energy and has no way to get it back, you will struggle through the harder areas of the game. Some classes have built-in energy management through attributes. Some get it through skills. However, all classes have energy management in some form or other. I'm going to talk a little bit about how each class manages its energy, talking about the Elementalist last, comparing Second Wind to Aether Prodigy, and then going into an energy management-based build, and then my usual nuking build for my Elementalist. So let's start with the Warrior. The Warrior has no natural energy management through attributes. It's got a low energy pool and slow energy regeneration. However, the Warrior has the use of Adrenaline, meaning it can use attacks without spending energy to activate them. Adrenaline usually fuels attack skills, but it also fuels a couple of support skills for the Warrior too. Most Warriors tend to run with about 3 or 4 Adrenaline skills in their bar, meaning they don't really have that much to worry about energy management-wise. Ranger. The Ranger has Expertise as an attribute. This reduces the energy cost of a variety of skills. They have a mediocre energy pool and an average energy regeneration, meaning that all the Ranger skills are on the list of reduced energy cost, they can maintain their energy by simply spending less than usual and allowing their natural energy regeneration to bring them back up to full. The Necromancer. The Necromancer has Soul Reaping as energy management. This attribute means the Necromancer gains energy whenever something dies within a certain range, within a limit of once every 5 seconds. This is a quite powerful attribute, especially for a minion master, as most of the time when a minion dies, the Necromancer will gain more energy, allowing more minions to be summoned. The Necromancer also has some skills which increase the rate of energy regeneration in others, such as Blood Ritual and Blood is Power. Some Necromancer builds are built entirely around these skills, usually referred to as Battery, because it can charge up the other members of the party. Mesmer. The Mesmer has no attribute-specific energy management. They do, however, have a large number of energy management skills in the Inspiration line. Their energy management skills usually revolve around affecting others. For example, Leech Signet gains the Mesmer energy when it interrupts a target casting a spell, Inspired Hex gains the Mesmer energy when it removes a hex from an ally, and Inspired Enchantment gains the Mesmer energy when it removes an enchantment from a foe. The Monk. The Monk has no direct attribute-specific energy management. However, Divine Favor means heals are more effective than normal, meaning the frequency at which spells need to be cast is reduced. They have one or two energy management skills, such as Peace and Harmony and Blessed Signet. However, the Monk usually relies on a secondary profession for energy management, usually the Elementalist or the Mesmer, as they have the largest number of energy management spells. Paragon. The Paragon has the Leadership attribute. This attribute gains the Paragon energy for each ally affected by a chant or shout they produce. The Paragon also has a number of skills such as Aria of Zeal, Zealous Anthem, and Lyric of Zeal, and the shout, "The Power is Yours," to aid in party-wide energy management. They also have the usage of Adrenaline, meaning they too can reduce their energy cost by using adrenaline-based skills. The Dervish. The Dervish has the Mysticism attribute. This attribute gains the Dervish health and energy each time an enchantment ends on them. This makes the Dervish particularly tough because they use a large number of enchantments. They're also especially tough when supported by Protection Monk due to the large number of enchantment skills in the Protection Prayers line. The Ritualist. The Ritualist has no direct attribute-specific energy management. However, spawning power helps increase the survivability of summoned spirits, and as such can reduce the Ritualist's need to use these skills again. The Ritualist has a number of energy management skills within the spawning power line, such as Attuned with Sonkai, Boon of Creation, Reclaim Essence, and Renewing Memories. These skills are conditional, meaning the energy management only occurs if a requirement is met. As such, a lot of Ritualists use a secondary profession to help with energy management. Assassin. The Sin has the attribute Critical Strikes, which means, alongside dealing more damage, critical hits also add to the energy's pool. This is a very effective energy management, and most skills run with high scores in Critical Strikes. The Sin also has a couple of energy management skills like Critical Eye, which increases the frequency of critical hits and the energy return from them. Elementalist. The Elementalist has energy management in two forms. Firstly, the attribute Energy Storage increases the amount of energy they have in their pool, allowing them to cast spells for much longer than other classes before using an energy management skill. They also have a large number of energy management skills in the form of Glyph of Lesser Energy, Glyph of Energy, Aether Prodigy, Second Wind, Master of Magic, Energy Boon, Aether Prism, Aether Renewal, Elemental Attunement, Fire Attunement, Water Attunement, Air Attunement, and Earth Attunement. As you can see, it is a large number of element energy management skills. Dual attunements, that is, elemental attunement and the attribute-specific attunement, is a popular choice, but more and more people are starting to use either Aether Prodigy or Second Wind for energy management, as it allows for energy management to be done with one skill rather than two. There are advantages and disadvantages to each energy management skill available to the elementalist. I'm going to compare Aether Prodigy and Second Wind. First, let's talk about the skills. I'm just going to read you the skill description. Second Wind, elite spell. You gain one energy for each point of energy lost due to exhaustion. This spell causes exhaustion. Aether Prodigy, elite enchantment spell. Lose all enchantments. For 5 to 20 seconds, depending on your energy storage ranks, you gain 6 energy regeneration. When Aether Prodigy ends, you lose 3 health for each point of energy you have. This spell causes exhaustion. Now let's compare the two. Second Wind has a 2-second casting time, twice as long as the activation time of Aether Prodigy, meaning it's easier to interrupt Second Wind. However, Aether Prodigy is an enchantment and therefore vulnerable to removal. Therefore, neither really holds an advantage over the other. Both Second Wind and Aether Prodigy cost 5 energy to use, so that's a tie. Second Wind takes 5 seconds to recharge, so does Aether Prodigy. Again, a tie. Maybe neither of them is better. Aether Prodigy increases the energy regeneration of the caster for an amount of time and causes exhaustion. Second Wind produces a direct energy gain relative to the amount of exhaustion of the caster. However, it also causes exhaustion. I prefer direct energy gain, so I'm going to score that win for Second Wind. I like my energy now, not later. When Aether Prodigy ends, it causes 3 points of damage for each point of energy in the caster's pool. Second Wind does not cause any damage. I score this one a win for Second Wind. I don't like being hurt. Aether Prodigy removes all enchantments when it is cast. Second Wind does not. Again, another advantage for Second Wind. I run with 15 energy storage on my elementalist. With Aether Prodigy, this will equate to an energy gain over 20 seconds of 45 energy. 50 minus the 5 for casting. Second Wind allows me to gain up to 64 energy, half of my normal 129-point energy pool, in just 2 seconds. Second Wind has a distinct advantage in energy gain here. However, as great as I've just made Second Wind sound, it does have some disadvantages. You pretty much have to make your energy pool as large as possible so as to get the best benefit out of Second Wind. This means using a wand and artifact with plus 15 energy, minus 1 energy regeneration inscriptions, and using the best energy storage rune you can, or at least that you don't mind losing the health from. And lastly, a set of Radiant Armour. That is a set of Nightfall Armour with Radiant Insignias on, as this is the only PvE way to get a set of armour that adds energy. With Aether Prodigy, you want an equipment set with as lower as energy pool as possible to limit the amount of damage you can take when it ends, if for any reason you can't cast spells to reduce your energy pool. As such, I would say Second Wind requires specific equipment and therefore a more expensive build to set up, but a far more efficient build once in play. So, now onto my build, which is called the Battery Necrogon. I used a Necromancer and added a Paragon secondary to it for primarily energy management skills. In fact, almost totally energy management skills. The idea being that this build can be taken into areas such as the Deep, which is the Lux and Elite mission in Factions, or Urgos Warren, or the Underworld, or anywhere where having a Battery Necromancer is advantageous and offers an advantage over another team member. So here's the build. Blood is Power, Blood Ritual, Aria of Zeal, Lyric of Zeal, Zealous Anthem, Signet of Lost Souls, Blood Renewal, and Signet of Return. This is going to be my variant of a Battery Necromancer with little to no offensive power, but excellent team management skills. The build is a Necromancer Paragon with 16 Blood Magic, that's 12, a Headpiece and a Superior Rune, 9 Soul Rupee, that's 6 plus a Superior Rune, and lastly, 11 Motivation. Blood is Power. Elite Enchantment Spell. Sacrifice 33% maximum health. For 10 seconds, target other ally, gain 6 energy regeneration. This skill is a very useful skill in increasing the energy regeneration of the selected target member. Blood Ritual. Enchantment Spell. Sacrifice 17% maximum health. For 14 seconds, target touched ally gains 3 energy regeneration. This is another skill useful for bolstering energy regen of the party. Aria of Zeal. Chant. For 10 seconds, the next time each ally within earshot uses a spell, that ally gains 5 energy. Whilst the energy gain from this seems low, it helps maintain energy amongst the whole party. Lyric of Zeal. Chant. For 10 seconds, the next time each ally within earshot uses a signet, that ally gains 7 energy. This can be a very useful energy management tool for yourself. If your energy is low and you use this and Signet of Lost Souls, you can gain health and a large amount of energy. Zealous Anthem. Chant. For 10 seconds, the next time each ally within earshot uses an attack skill, that ally gains 7 energy. This is another skill designed to bolster the energy gain of your entire group. Signet of Lost Souls. Signet. If target foe is below 50% health, you gain 64 health and 6 energy. This skill is one of two self-healing skills designed to heal the sacrificed health and help take pressure off friendly monks. Blood Renewal, Enchantment Spell. Sacrifice 25% maximum health. For 10 seconds, you gain 6 health regeneration. When Blood Renewal ends, you gain 200 health. This is the second of our self-healing skills, and one of the most efficient. Again, designed to take the pressure off our friendly monks. Signet of Return. Signet. Resurrect target party member with 5% health and 1% energy for each party member within earshot. Due to the fact that this is tied with leadership, it resurrects the targets in a terrible state. It may be worth using an alternative res, such as Resurrection Signet. I chose it, though, because it's a hard res, meaning it's reusable. And it's available to us because we have a Paragon secondary. So that's it. It's an energy management heavy build, only really useful in PvE and only in certain areas too, but it will greatly bolster the energy of any team it's attached to. It's reasonably self-reliant, having its own energy and health management skills in place, along with additional energy gain from Soul Reaping. I wouldn't recommend running a battery build unless requested, as they're generally not needed. However, if you are asked for one, I think this is as good as any other. Now onto my Nuking build. This build has evolved as I've played through the game. Being at 1500 hours on my Elementalist, it's changed many times as new campaigns have come out and as skill changes have taken place. But this is its final form, at least until Eye of the North comes out. For this build, I use 16 fire magic. That's 12, plus a headpiece, plus a superior rune. And 15 energy storage. That's 12, plus a superior rune. I use a fire wand with plus 15 energy and minus 1 energy regeneration. And a flame artifact with minus 15 energy, 1 energy regen. Sorry, minus 1 energy regen and plus 30 health. Even with my superior rune of vigor, this leaves me with low health. However, with careful aggro management and good use of my self-heal, I can handle pretty much anything without dying. So, here is my build, the Second Wind Nuker. Immolate, Incendiary Bonds, Fireball, Phoenix, Rodgort's Invocation, Glyph of Restoration, Second Wind, and Sunspear Rebirth Signet. Immolate, Spell. Target foe is struck for 63 fire damage and is set on fire for 3 seconds. I picked this spell for its quick recharge and its low energy cost of 10. Not low for most classes, but my energy pool is 129, which means I can cast this spell 12 times even without any regeneration, and cast it quickly. It also causes burning, which will deal another 42 damage over 3 seconds if the burning isn't removed. Incendiary Bonds. Hex spell. After 3 seconds, target foe and all nearby foes are struck for 84 fire damage and are set on fire for 3 seconds. I picked this skill as part of a combo, which I will discuss in a moment. Fireball spell. Send out a ball of fire that strikes target foe and all adjacent foes for 119 fire damage. I picked this spell as a second part of my combo. It has a casting time of 2 seconds, which means when you take into account the slight delay between casting spells, and the time taken for the fireball projectile to travel to your foe, it hits almost simultaneously with incendiary bonds, dealing 203 fire damage altogether and causing burning for 3 seconds. This means you get a large damage spike across a small area. Phoenix spell. A fiery phoenix rises at your location, striking adjacent foes for 119 fire damage, and then flies out to your target, exploding on impact. This explosion strikes for an additional 95 fire damage. This skill is designed to target melee foes hitting myself, but can be used as another spell in place of fireball if it is unavailable for any reason. The reason I use it against melee foes is it hits all adjacent foes and then explodes hitting all foes near your target, meaning it essentially hits twice if cast on a melee foe. That's twice on everyone adjacent to you. Rodgort's Invocation. Spell. Target foe and all nearby foes are struck for 127 fire damage and set on fire for 3 seconds. The reason I picked this spell is for several reasons. Firstly, it's a high damage spell, dealing slightly more damage than any of the others I have. It also hits a slightly larger area than any of the other AoE skills I have. Lastly, it has no projectile, unlike Fireball and Phoenix, meaning it can't be dodged, can be used without a line of sight, i.e. through walls, and lastly, it casts at the same time as Incendiary Bonds would hit if Incendiary Bonds is cast prior to it. So if you cast Incendiary Bonds and then Rodgort's Invocation, they will hit simultaneously, dealing a large amount of AoE damage without requiring a line of sight. Very useful in PvP, especially in alliance battles when people have a habit of running behind walls to prevent you hitting them. Glyph of Restoration. Glyph. For 15 seconds, your next spell heals you for 105 health, and you are healed for 400% of the energy cost of that spell. This is my self-heal, designed to help keep me alive. It heals 150 health with most of my spells if cast prior to them, and 205 health if cast prior to Rogort's Invocation. This, in my opinion, is the most energy-efficient healing skill available for an elementalist, as it only heals you when you require it. However, there is an extra casting time of your next spell to consider, so using this with Immolate ensures a quick heal, whereas using it with Rogort's Invocation ensures a larger heal, but takes longer to achieve. Second Wind, Elite Spell. You gain 1 energy for each point of energy lost due to exhaustion. This spell causes exhaustion. As previously mentioned, this spell is used to generate large amounts of energy. It can generate up to half my energy pool if I manage to balance my exhaustion properly. This took some practice, but I do prefer this skill to any other energy management skill available for the Elementalist. Sunspear Rebirth Signet. Signet. Resurrect target dead ally at your location with full health and 10% energy for each Sunspear rank you have attained. This can only be used once per mission unless recharged by a morale boost. I have a Sunspear rank of 9, meaning I can resurrect someone with full health and 90% energy. The most efficient resurrect I have as an elementalist. I try to use this signet only as a last resort if a monk goes down on the ground, and try and let people with hard reses heal resurrect anyone else. So, there's my build. I use one hex spell and a number of AoE damage skills to spike health across an area around my primary target, who is usually a mob in the centre of my group as opposed to the target called by my party leader. So, that's energy management. I hope it's helped you all. It's my experience of things. You might find it's more efficient to run things a different way. If you do, I'd love to hear about the ways you deal with your energy management and how effective it is, or indeed any problems you have with your own energy management, and maybe I can suggest some ways to resolve that problem. My email address is cal_agrim@hotmail.co.uk. That's kal_agrim@hotmail.co.uk. Okay, so good night from me, Cal Agrim.
So that's it for this episode of Guildcast. You can contact me at sean@guildcast.com, sHAWN@guildcast.com, and Lady Sinea at ladysinea@gmail.com. As we get closer to the release of Eye of the North and the preview weekend in 2 weeks, I'm going to actually hold off on any concrete plans for the next show topic. But you can bet I'll at least have a show giving my reviews on the preview weekend, because I am so excited about Eye of the North, as you can probably tell. So until then, be sure to tell your friends and tell your guildmates about guildcast.com.
Hey, Sean. My in-game handle is FierceMiniWaffles, and I just want to say you're doing a really good job with the show. You've informed me of a lot of things, and you're really good at it, and keep it up, and I hope you're doing well. All right. See you, Sean.
This has been a presentation of Guildcast.com. Guildcast is part of the Virgin Worlds Podcast Collective.